Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is Soccer Matters. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in, everybody. We've got the special Friday night edition here. We got a number of things we're going to do on the show here tonight, but number one, phone lines are open for you tonight. I want to get your take on anything from the Euros, the whole talk about the negativity and the defensive tactics. Does that take away from what Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo did? Or did Ronaldo do anything? Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Can't take away from them winning it. They won it. But let's get your thoughts on that. 713-780-3776. We stream at ESPN 975. Your humble servant here, Glenn Davis. Podcast, always on podcastarena.com and iTunes. Facebook, get over to Soccer Matters. There is an article there from the New York Times I want to talk about here tonight. I do feel bad for soccer sometimes because of these hit-and-run pieces where, you know, as is in the media these days, these are kind of like bait and switch. And a guy wrote a really terrible article. Like, it's hard to believe it's even in a newspaper like the Times, although maybe it isn't hard to believe. But just ill-researched, really stupid premise, pretty remarkable, bagging on Major League Soccer and not the fans and that they're fabricated and it's a league that doesn't care about the Hispanic fan. I do have some thoughts on that. Don Garber responded saying 33% of the fans of Major League Soccer are Latino-based, which isn't a bad number, but it could be a bigger number. Certainly in Houston, we need to improve that number. 713-780-3776 is the number tonight, 713-780-3776. Marcelo Balboa will join me tonight. He's going to be on the call of the Dynamo tonight and L.A. We'll get some of his thoughts. I want your thoughts ahead of the Los Angeles game. You know, I saw Kenwin Jones has been signed by the new Atlanta franchise, 1 year out. We're hearing rumors of Nicolas Lodera of Boca Juniors going to join Seattle next week. By the way, Boca Juniors got whacked last night and knocked out of the Copa Libertadores. So I'm going to talk about that because I've had the opportunity to call a couple of games, the Atlético Nacional and Sao Paulo of Brazil semifinals. The Copa Libertadores is unbelievable. I wish outside of Latino fans, I wish American fans and people who might have grown up in this country got into the Copa Libertadores more because it is an unbelievable tournament. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight as well. Bill McDonald, former Houston Dynamos here in Houston in the 80s, was an assistant coach also with the Houston Hotshots, is going to come on. We're going to talk about some of the people that are coming back for the August 13th honoring of former pro players that played on the professional teams prior to the Dynamo. That is going to be a fun weekend, and it's going to be great to see a lot of these guys coming back. Beto Dos Santos is coming back, a whole bunch of different guys. Kai Hofskovi, we're trying to get Kyle Rowe Jr., a whole bunch of different people. 713-780-3776 is the number. Bizarre that Barcelona supports Messi the way they did. Boy, you just can't call your own out anymore, can you? You just can't call your own out anymore. It's just a race to defend all the time, even when people have done wrong. It's kind of sad. Certainly don't grow that way. 713-780-3776 is the number. I'm going to re-air the Wade Barrett interview. Now, if you haven't heard the Wade Barrett interview, it gets into some nuances. It's not coach speak, which I appreciate from Wade. I'm interested to see what he's going to do in the striker position tonight out in Los Angeles, when the Dynamo take on the LA Galaxy. Obviously, without DeMarcus Beasley, that's a big loss. One would expect Shannon Williams and Jahlil Anibamba to hold down the two outside back positions. The question is who's more comfortable playing in the left back position, which always can be an issue. Our thanks to our sponsors, 7-Up, Amigo Energy, Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, Bud Light, the Daspit Law Firm, the Gorgeous Gale Bar Munich, the King's Head Pub, Next Level ID Soccer Camp. By the way, they are doing an event tomorrow. It's nextlevelsoccerid.com. That's a girls' ID camp this weekend. So if you're a freshman to a senior, you want to get in front of college coaches, great opportunity out in Katy tomorrow. Again, it's nextlevelsoccerid.com. So number of stuff here. It's been a fun run up to this show. I just jumped on Sirius Radio, did an interview with Eric Winalda and David Mossy. Talking Dynamo, talking Copa Libertadores. So it's been a fun day, and it's going to get better here tonight. So we're talking the Euros. And was this one for the memory books? Look, if you're Portugal, you don't care. Look at the pictures of those guys celebrating. You navigated the tournament. But quite frankly, you wouldn't have advanced if it weren't for third-place teams potentially advancing in the Euros. With three draws, you shouldn't be able to get out of your group. Then again, it's the navigation of the tournament that counts. That is what Portugal did. And I'm thinking when Cristiano Ronaldo gets injured and goes off, that can work in a number of ways. You know, the conventional thinking, everybody's going to go, okay, Ronaldo's out. That's it. It's France's, you know. I mean, let's go get some good French champagne and let's start celebrating. In reality, what can happen is the reverse, too. It might mean that the remaining players with Portugal lift their level, like many times we've seen when people get sent off. It might mean that the pressure begins to get even greater for the host nation in France. But I'd like your thoughts on the Euros. And compare it also to the Copa America Centenario. Which tournament did you like better? Euros or Copa America Centenario? You tell me. 713-780-3776. Now, on that note, France and Wales and the U.S., for that matter, made big jumps in the FIFA World Rankings if you care about them. Argentina is still ranked number one, despite losing to Chile. France jumped. Le Bleu has moved up. They are going to be a very, very good team for a number of years. I don't think there's any question because of the youth. Wales, 15 spots. Now, is Wales really the number 11 team in the world? Not just because they make a semifinal run. So this is why rankings, all these things are very strange. The U.S. is now in the top 25, 6 points higher than they were a month ago. Beating Ecuador in the quarterfinals probably helped them. So it's Argentina, Belgium, Colombia, Germany, and Chile. Honestly, Colombia is talented. I don't think they had a great Copa America Centenario. Mexico are in at number 14, even though they were slayed by Chile in a very big way. 713-780-3776. Do FIFA rankings even matter to you? Should I just never ever talk about them again on the show? Are the U.S. and Mexico where they should be after their performances in the Copa Centenario? Here's one that's going to touch locally now. And sometimes you can read into this. Jersey sales. Who are the most popular MLS players when it comes to jersey sales? Check this out. Number one, Andrea Pirlo of New York City FC. Number two, Clint Dempsey of the Seattle Sounders. Now, Seattle and Portland are probably going to be way up there because of who they are and the attendances they get. David Villa, New York City FC. Number three. Number four, how about this? Jordan Morris of Seattle. Who, by the way, I mentioned on this show, and I'm on record, he'd get 10 to 15 goals in his rookie year. He's probably going to set a rookie mark for goals scored. For those of you who care. 713-780-3776. Number five, Steven Gerrard of L.A. Number six, Kaká of Orlando City. Number seven, Didier Drogba of Montreal. Number eight, Sebastian Giovinco, Toronto FC. Frank Lampard of New York City FC. Number 10, how about this? Dom Dwyer, Sporting Kansas City. 11, Darlington Nagbe of Portland. 12, Diego Valeri of Portland. 13, Giovanni Dos Santos of L.A. 14, Robbie Keane of L.A. 15, Graham Zusi, Sporting Kansas City. 16, How about one for the center backs? Nat Borchers of Portland. 17. Another defender, Brad Evans of Seattle. 18. Osvaldo Alonso of Seattle. So Seattle, with their big fan base, they're killing it merchandise-wise. Breck Shea, Orlando City. And number 20, Kai Kamara, the New England Revolution. Come on, Houston. Are you kidding? We don't have one damn Dynamo player in the top 20. Am I allowed to say that? I didn't mean to say that. I'm getting a thumbs up. That wasn't very... Not one Dynamo player in the top 20. So what is that? Is it due to star players? Can we correlate that with anything else? Because the fans want a star down here. Kenwyn Jones is signing with Atlanta. Lodero of Boca Juniors is going to sign with, now he would have been a nice signing, a Latin player in this market. And one that's coming from Boca Juniors. How is there not a Dynamo player in the top 20 in the league merchandising-wise? And does that bother you? And do you think there's correlation? Or does it not really matter? That's a real question. Do we need a star player here? Not that there aren't good players. Don't take it personal. But do we have that one player that we can latch onto? It's not Kubo Torres, even though the Dynamo spent a lot of money on him. And he's going off to the Olympics. He's going to come back. I'm thinking his season's in real jeopardy. It's going to maybe be a wash for Kubo Torres again this year in Major League Soccer. Do you even care, Dynamo fans? I mean, that's the other thing I'm worried about. I see you participating and coming to games. What's in your hearts? I mean, do you want a bigger name player here? And is that, you know, do we have to say that this is always going to be a team that's not going to have some bigger name star player? It's, after all, singular players change franchises. Singular players can change a franchise. 713-780-3776 is the number. Does it mean anything to you, Dynamo fans, that there is not a Dynamo player in top 20 in the league in jersey sales? It's dominated by Seattle and New York City FC. Who we got on the line there? All right, Ernie, you're up. What's your thoughts, Ernie? 713-780-3776 is the number. Ernie, you're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to make the point that a lot of the teams that we're talking about with high merchandise sales, you take a look at Portland, you take a look at Seattle, Orlando, even L.A. to a sense just got an NFL team, and you take a place like Houston, you know, we have other sports. You know, you got football, you got baseball, you got basketball, and teams that typically do well make the playoffs. So I don't think it necessarily speaks to the fan base. I think that Houston has a good soccer fan base. I just think that when it comes to merchandise sales, they choose to spend their money elsewhere. And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, Ernie, don't hang up. I don't want you to hang up. I don't want you to hang up because, first of all, there's other sports in Seattle, maybe not as much in Portland. We've also got guys from Sporting Kansas City, Montreal, New England. So sure, there is a cross-section. I'm just saying that to me seems a little bit like an excuse.
I get that, and I agree with you to a certain extent. We take a look at Kansas City, for instance, not a professional basketball team. I just think the dollars aren't spread as thin as they are in Houston and even Seattle, which obviously had more sales than anyone else. I feel there's some bitterness there. You know,
but Ernie, if the club says they're drawing 18,000 a game, there's something wrong if they're not buying merchandise, because that's what you want to do. That's a revenue stream. That maybe is a way of buying a bigger name player, which everybody in Houston clamors for.
Absolutely agree with that. There has to be somebody that you want to buy and put on your back at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, you know, I mean, a lot of these guys are big names from Europe. Okay, I get that. Nat Borchers? He's a center back with a big beard. Somehow he's loved in Portland.
Yeah.
He's selling jerseys. You know, Nat is going in when it's time to renegotiate his contract and going, hey, by the way, I sell some jerseys for you guys. Center backs can't normally say that.
In the Northwest is kind of that unforgotten area of the country. I mean, when they get somebody in there, not necessarily somebody with a name, but when they get a team, somebody that they can cheer and kind of support, you know, they go all out. You know, there's, I mean, have you been to the Northwest? There's not a lot to do. It takes 5 hours to get to the next major city. I think that's the support that they get is if you come out and you put a team there, we're going to support you.
Yeah, I think there's something deeper that can be read into this, and it may go to this desire from Dynamo fans to get a star player to really wrap their arms around down here. And that's not a slight on anybody that's currently here, but there is something about a name. There are reasons why people go to games. Sometimes it's for a very singular reason, and that could be one specific player. I mean, look at J.J. Watt of the Texans. Do we know who else is on that team? If you're not a real hardcore NFL person, can you name anybody else? Probably not.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd like to see the sales when the Dynamo were winning championships, because when you compare those two times of the decade, I think the sales were elevated, obviously, because you're winning more. So I think wins have something to do with it. Same thing with star players. If a player elevates themselves and a team is winning, you take Altuve, you know, 2-3 years ago, now look at his jersey sales. I don't know the numbers, but I would guess he's up there with any Astros player.
Yeah, that's a fair point. People jump on that wagon. They'll spend the bucks when you're winning and you got a winner. And I get that, but people are wearing Dynamo jerseys at games. There's no question about that. We see a lot of orange there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody in the top 20. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that phone call, Ernie. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
All right, 713-780-3776. You want to weigh in on that? Hey, here's a nice tweet from DeMarcus Beasley. I'm out here in Santa Monica and was hoping to see someone famous. Instead, I run into @Josie Altidore. That's pretty funny. Aaron Ramsey, Arsenal. Quote, it saddens me to hear this devastating news in Nice. This has to stop. Hashtag pray for Nice. At John Campen, Sporting Kansas City. Need a good laugh? Go to the park and people watch everyone playing Pokemon Go. It's pretty hilarious. Everyone's staring at their phone. Great. Falcao, that's Radamel Falcao of Chelsea. My thoughts and prayers are with the victims in Nice and the people of France. Olger Badstuber, @Badstuber of Bayern Munich. Quote, deeply shocked, sad about the tragedy in Nice. My feelings are with the families and friends of the victim. A lot of sentiment around this disgusting slaughter of people in Nice, which sadly the world continues to sit around and watch happen. Don't get it. Nike's going to unveil a new vibrant soccer ball for their upcoming Premier League season. I don't know if you've seen this. I need to get this up on Facebook Soccer Matters. The Premier League is releasing this new ball. It's called the Ordem Soccer Ball on Monday. It's tough to miss. It has pink, and it has almost looks like the colors of Seattle. It's got like a rave, they call it rave green out there. Green, blue, pink, white, and then big black borders. Of course, it's got a Nike swoosh in black. Kind of looks like a Easter egg. 713-780-3776 is the number. I think it's break time here. Before we go to break, though, quick word here. Excuse me, for Bud Light. As a host of Soccer Matters today, I'm speaking on behalf of my favorite political party. Yeah, we're getting political tonight. It's the Bud Light Party. People say the country's divided, that we disagree on everything. It's not true. We agree on a lot, like puppy videos. Everybody loves puppy videos, three-day weekends, free parking. How about queso and margaritas? In fact, margarita sounds pretty good right now. Messi and Cristiano, you know what else everybody loves? Beer. Nothing brings America together, and I know Tyler Scott knows this, my producer, like beer. And nothing brings America together like Bud Light. Raise one right now. Join the Bud Light Party and myself every Tuesday night for the best in soccer talk. Let's get you on the phone, 713-780-3776. Wade Barrett interview tonight. It gets into nuances. You might want to listen to this ahead of the Dynamo tonight because it'll give you some insight into what the manager of the Houston Dynamo is saying. We also have Bill McDonald, over 500 wins at Strake Jesuit High School, the preparatory school, but was also a former professional player here in the 80s. We're going to talk about former pros coming back to Houston on August 13th for the Dynamo Toronto FC game. Also, to close it out, we'll also have Marcelo Balboa on the program as well tonight. All right, 713-780-3776 right now. I got a pair of tickets to the Dynamo Vancouver, July 23rd. That's a Saturday. It's a week from Saturday, week from tomorrow. Pair of tickets right now to the Dynamo Vancouver. We'll give it to the seventh caller. Let's take a 7-Up and a Bud Light break.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. I think it was Ed Davenport winning the tickets to Dynamo Vancouver. By the way, you can get over to HoustonDynamo.com. It's where you get tickets for the Dynamo and the Houston Dash. The Dash are in action tomorrow night. That is a fact, with the Dynamo out in Los Angeles tonight. So you got the Dynamo on TV tonight, and then tomorrow you have the women in town here at BBVA Compass Stadium. All right, so a guy named Chris Jones of ESPN FC wrote an article. It says, sorry, CR7, Portugal epitomized Euro 2016. Cynical, unsporting, and awful. How do you feel about that, Portugal fan, Ronaldo fan? Is that unfair criticism? I don't like the fact that there were 24 teams in it, but I know that's the way of the world now. Too many teams. And if, in fact, there were only the top two teams in each group stage advancing, then Portugal wouldn't have advanced. But it may have watered down this tournament. Northern Ireland, the Welsh, Iceland, all great stories. I think that's the real story of the tournament. Wales beats Belgium 3-1. So, I don't know. 24 teams makes it a problem. I do think in both these tournaments we saw that great star players and many players are going into these tournaments fatigued. There is a real danger around the world now of putting less than fresh soccer players on the field, which is going to mean less than good football. And it's going to mean that these countries that are organized and are investing, that are smaller, and guys are getting experiences in various leagues around the world and have been put in some pressure environments, are going to continue to knock off the giants. Nobody's scared of Brazil anymore. It's hard to believe. Nobody. And even when we got to the knockout phase, this was Chris Jones who wrote this. Chris Jones said the knockout stages didn't bring us anything and we thought it would. So nobody liked it. He says Portugal were awful. I don't agree. Portugal was organized. Portugal defended well, for those who like that. Yeah, they were a little brutal at times. Nobody can take it away from them, and I don't think they really care, to be honest with you. They won the whole tournament. But it's not going to go down as one of the greatest Euros ever. So if you're a Ronaldo fan, you're a Portugal fan, tell me why I'm going wrong here. Let's go to the phone lines again. 713-780-3776. James, what's on your mind tonight, James?
I wanted to discuss your comment earlier about South America versus Europe. And it was a pleasant surprise, actually, to watch Copa Libertadores and hear you commentating on the game. But I just think that there is a lot of truth to what you said, and you wish that more fans would watch South American soccer. And we forget that all these stars at one point are coming from South America, and the technical ability in South America, I think, is superior than Europe. For example, you look at Russia versus England. Even as bad as Russia was, they still kept in the game. They're organized, and they're able to get a draw. In South America, another example is Bolivia. Bolivia got killed in the tournament, but Chile barely beat them. But there's that South American grit and the I think it's just a little bit more exciting. I just don't think it's as marketed. I don't think it's commercialized here. But I think if you're a true fan or a fan that's opening up to soccer, do pay attention to the Copa Libertadores, like you said, because that's where all the stars come out of. And I think it's a great league that's just not marketed as well here. But certainly I think we should educate ourselves or try to see these leagues, because that's where you're going to see the next great player.
Well, I'm glad you hit this topic, because I do want to talk about the Copa Libertadores. And let me just, to back your point up, and I did the Atletico Junior and Sao Paulo of Brazil semifinal. Marlos Moreno, who's been bought by Manchester City, he's only 19 years of age. He's probably going to get loaned out to a Spanish team. He's a part of it. Davinson Sanchez is a 20-year-old who just signed a 5-year contract with Ajax. So all these guys were playing in this tournament before moving on to their new clubs. That was the stipulation of the signing. But just some amazing talent. Ricardo Centurion, an Argentine, 23 years of age. A guy that just picks a ball up and dribbles at people. And he made his way back after suspension into the second leg this past Wednesday. So we can go on and on with these names. And that's before I begin to talk about Boca and Independiente del Valle, which is an amazing story. So you don't have a Brazilian team. You don't have an Argentine team in the final. But what you do have in the Copa Libertadores, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have all that young talent on display. You have incredible visuals. I mean, the images that come from these stadiums are mind-blowing. You have amazing audio from the fans. You have eye-popping skill, the passion, and then the other thing that's so exciting, it's almost chaotic. It's like a train that's about to go off the rails but doesn't, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great comment just to add to that, how chaotic it is and everything, just to a point with Boca and with the other comment you made about the bigger team in soccer right now and being home. It seems in the last 5 years, it's not an advantage anymore. And showing Boca felt that pressure and their stars didn't show up to play. And the smaller teams are getting better. They're competing with the big teams. And I think the difference between the 90s and now is that you don't need to play for Flamengo, Boca Juniors, or River Plate to go to Europe. You can play for a smaller team because of the internet age and all the marketing going on. You can have a shot at going to Europe. And before Copa Libertadores, unless you're making the finals, you really, as a player, it was hard for you to go to Europe. But now even the bottom tier teams are getting their players exposed and selling them. And certainly that's the great thing about Libertadores. You might not have a team that makes the final, but certainly players are being sold and you're seeing all these stars.
It's unbelievable. And think about the year we've had, right? We had Leicester City win the Premier League. We had Wales and the likes of Iceland and Northern Ireland doing things in the Euros. And then when you look at the Copa Libertadores, which is the most prestigious tournament in South America, it's one that, again, I'm going to stress to you as American fans. I know Latinos here in Houston and around the country are tuned into this. But this stuff is drama at its best. You don't have to have a team, okay? This stuff, Independiente del Valle coming out of Ecuador, a team that was not even in the first division in recent times, goes into Boca Juniors and beats them 3-1. They don't seem overawed yet, except for the beginning of the match. At that point, you're going, oh, this is going to be Boca rolling. And the next thing you know, they flip the tables on them. You were right. I thought Boca was stressed at home, probably the curse of Maradona being there. But it's remarkable what's going on. And I think if you want to be somebody that's forecasting the future and you want to look at the Ricardo Centurions who are going to be bought by bigger teams, or the Jonathan Calleris, or the Rodrigo Caio, who's playing in the Olympics with Brazil. These guys are all early 20s. Moreno's 19, going to be 20, I guess, at some point. These guys are Davinson Sanchez. These guys, you know, you're seeing guys in an environment that's it's hostile and on the edge, and yet you're going to be watching them one day in the Premier League, and you're going to go, oh, wow, I remember watching him in the Copa Libertadores. That's cool. So,
Glenn, can I just add another point about what you said about Portugal, too?
Yes.
I think as fans the last few years, we're kind of spoiled by the technical and the supremacy that Barcelona had over soccer and that great soccer. And we've kind of forgot that soccer sometimes is more gritty than that, and it's more about competing and all these things. And, you know, it was great to see Barcelona play and play that technical possession style, but sometimes in Portugal is an example of this, and whether you hate Mourinho or not, it's that gritty soccer with being organized and having that will to fight that will win you a championship. And just like Mourinho has a lot of criticism, but when people that really know soccer and saw Porto, when he coached Porto, Porto played great soccer, but Porto also had great players, so he was able to play really good soccer. But it goes back. We kind of think the Barcelona effect is, you know, we're expecting all this technical soccer and possession type soccer, and we kind of forgot that sometimes there's 11 guys on the pitch, and if they believe, they'll get results. And Iceland was great to see that in the European Cup. And you know, last night with you know, I'm a big Boca fan. I'm depressed, but certainly for Ecuador, it was nice to see 11 guys getting it done when no one thought they would get it done.
Yeah, but, and thank you. Were you like me, James? Before I let you go, were you like me once Boca scored? You were just kind of going, "Oh man, it's because Independiente del Valle's goalkeeper looked very nervous. They did not look comfortable." And then, you know, lo and behold, they did get into a comfort zone, scoring on a counterattack, and then ultimately it was a walk in the park to them at La Bombonera.
I just think the loss of losing your best striker is some problem, selling him, and you know, Carlos Tevez is left with more than he can handle, and I didn't think he played well, kind of, you know, didn't step up to the plate, and, you know, you're not going to have a perfect day, but, you know, as Boca fans, you're always thankful what Carlos Tevez has done for Boca. But it's really time to regroup and get rid of all these guys and just stick with the guys from the youth academy. And just before I go, just a fun fact here, all the MLS teams, including Barcelona and everyone, they're singing all of the Boca songs and the fans and the chants. All those chants you hear around the MLS, all those fans, most of those songs are originally from the Boca teams in La Doce.
That's cool.
Actually really nice. And
yeah, and I think, you know what, and you presented in a way that it's a good thing. This guy wrote in the New York Times was like, "Oh, well, you know, you're taking your Eurocentric, you're taking your chance from other places." He had no knowledge of any of this that you just mentioned to Boca Juniors. But this guy who wrote this piece in the Times, I mean, we all take stuff from everywhere else, okay? I mean, the Stones did it with the Blues in the Deep South. I mean, the Beatles, Zeppelin. I mean, come on. I mean, so what's wrong with that? Now, sometimes people take it to extremes and become a little bit elitist when they've followed the game for a short term, and we also get a couple knuckleheads who want to be hardcore type hooligans here in the U.S. That are posers. But so what if some of this stuff is coming from other places? The way you presented it, it's not a bad thing.
No, it just that's the way it is. And actually, it says a lot when Barcelona is hiring the guys from the Boca to teach their fans how to sing and how to coordinate things. It says a lot about Boca Juniors as a club. But Glenn, thanks a lot for all your feedback. I thought what you said at one point during the game about Ronaldo was making some points that he didn't expect Ecuador to play that way or this and that. And I think your experience really showed as a commentator and great stuff. And thank you for everything.
Thank you, James. I appreciate the great educated commentary there from James, a Boca Juniors fan. I love that. And I'm going to stress it again, and like James did, and he brought some great points out. Copa Libertadores is unreal. You should make it destination viewing. You still got time to catch the final. It'll be Atletico Nacional from Colombia. Highly talented team, who, by the way, signed this striker. They've got problems. They signed a striker named Miguel Borja, who goes on to score 4 goals in his first 2 games for them. He's playing for a team in Colombia called Cortolua. Had 19 goals in 21 games for them, breaking a league record. He gets signed, and his first 2 games are against Sao Paulo of Brazil. And by the time it's said and done, has scored 4 goals in 2 games. Miguel Borja, again, another young player to keep an eye on. Orlando Barrio, another one of Atletico Nacional. Had a game winner against Rosario Central in stoppage time. Back in June, there was some rumor he was coming to Major League Soccer, I think to New York City FC. So it's exciting. And the final, first time in, I think, 21 years or something, that there's no Brazilian or Argentine team in the final. So it's Atletico Nacional of Colombia. The whole country of Colombia now is supporting them, taking on the Cinderella story, the fairy tale of Independiente del Valle of Ecuador. It's awesome stuff. finals are coming up, I think, next week and the week after. It'll be home and home or home and away, whatever you want to call it. Did you see this field? I mean, this was a joke. I mean, this is where you lose incredible credibility. How this ever happened, I don't know. This past Saturday, the Western New York Flash of the NWSL taking on the Seattle Reign. How narrow the field was. I thought it was a joke or somebody did a Photoshop, honestly. So the Western New York Flash usually play their home games at Salem Stadium. There was a music festival. They had to play at Frontier Field. The field was only 58 yards across. And it was bizarre. Now, how anybody could allow this to happen is a joke. The league can't let this happen. Here's what the commissioner, Jeff Plush, said. As a professional league, we need to ensure that the integrity of the game is respected both on and off the field. We did not do that tonight. We apologize to NWSL players, coaches, and fans. How does it happen, Jeff? It can't possibly happen. How does it happen? Unbelievable. By the way, the transfer window, there's all kinds of talk in it. I don't think there's any question. There's big talk in the transfer window, and there's a number of big names out there. N'Golo Kanté of Leicester City is expected to go to Chelsea. Balotelli, obviously, Jurgen Klopp doesn't want him around Liverpool. He's gone. Kenwyn Jones is going to go to Atlanta in Major League Soccer in a year. But how about if you're Bradford City, who for the sum of $1.29 bought goalkeeper Colin Doyle from Blackpool? All right. Quick word as we go to break here. More to come here. It's the best in soccer talk. Self-proclaimed. ESPN 97.5 Soccer Matters. Gorgeous Gale, great Irish pub. Get to it. 5555 Morningside. Pint and a bite. Daspit Law Firm. We thank John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They've got you. DaspitLaw.com, 713-588-HURT. Appreciate Bud Light's support of this show. Amigo Energy, we thank you. Don't forget, www.amigoenergy.com/soccer matters. Dance Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, we thank you as well. And all our great Soccer Matters pubs. Bar Munich, Gorgeous Gale, King's Head, Richmond Arms. We love that you are supporting the game on the radio. Support them as well. First, Next Level Soccer ID tomorrow. You can still sign up. Women's ID Camp. NextLevelSoccerID.com. 7-Up, we love, we love it on its own, and we certainly love 7-Up and Squirt as a mixer, and I have the perfect spirit for that, Tyler Scott. All right, we'll take a break. Spinning great music as usual.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. This segment's going to be brought to you by the Houston Dynamo. Get your Dynamo tickets over at HoustonDynamo.com. That's the place to get them. You can get your Houston Dash tickets there as well. We do know the Dynamo will be taking on FC Dallas on the 20th in the U.S. Open Cup quarterfinals. Friday night, they'll be taking on the L.A. Galaxy as they head out on the road again. Vancouver will be coming to town at the end of the month. So time to get your tickets. Houston Dynamo. .com. The Richmond Arms is one of Houston's premier soccer pubs, along with the King's Head Pub, designed and built with soccer in mind for your superior watching entertainment. Both locations open and showing every game live. They'll show Dynamo games there as well, just as well down at Bar Munich in the Gorgeous Gale. Check out their website. It's therichmondarmsonline.com, therichmondarmsonline.com, or thekingsheadpubhouston.com. You can catch Dynamo games there as well. They've had a successful run with all the Euros and everything else that has been going on in the world of soccer this summer. We got the Olympics coming up as well, so everybody's going to be tuning into that in August. Brings us now to the manager of the Houston Dynamo. He's Wade Barrett. He joins us now. Wade, how are you?
I'm good, Glenn. And you?
Doing great. Great to have you on the show again. And we love giving you this platform here to talk about the Dynamo and where it's at and the way you've let us come into kind of the inner sanctum of the team a little bit. So let's just start off by just getting your impressions on the Orlando game and the pros and cons of that one for the manager.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn, definitely pros and cons. It was going to be a difficult match going on the road. You know, the temperature, the humidity. I mean, we understand all those things playing on the turf. They obviously went through a coaching change prior to the game, and you never know what kind of a new look the team might bring after something like that. But, you know, I looked at it as a real opportunity for us to kind of build on the momentum we had from the Philadelphia game and to take that into the road. The group has been feeling really confident and ready to get that win on the road. And, you know, we, again, I thought we were very disciplined. We were hard to play against. I know there were a couple breakdowns, but for the most part, the guys did a really good job limiting chances. Going on the road, I think we ended up out shooting them. It was something like 16-7. And we were really close, Glenn. And that's kind of the con that comes in is that, you know, we were disciplined. We limited chances and, thought the game might come down to one goal. And, you know, we were right there. I think we could have done better with a couple opportunities. Giles had a great breakthrough, a great run, and got that chance in the 89th minute. Then on another day, might squeak off the inside of the post and go in. So I still felt very positive about a lot of the parts of the game. But also, you know, I mean, we're disappointed. We're still setting out to get 3 points. And I really thought that was an opportunity for us to pick up the full 3 points on the road. So pleased with some things. And, you know, disappointed that we're just a little bit off. You know, we're just short of picking up those 3 points on the road.
Yeah, let's talk about that because Giles Barnes in the 89th minute, I believe, that play that you mentioned, gets a pass, hits a shot that looks like it's going in, hits the post, rolls away from the goal. It would have been another late dramatic win. You love the organizational side of it. You redefined a lot of things in the opinion of me here. And it looks like it's working. You are a harder team to play against. But the bottom line is you're going to have to start winning some of these games, and you're going to have to do it pretty soon. Is this purely coming down to just the inability to get a consistent finisher? What does it come down to? Because, you know, you don't want to be here 2-3 weeks from now telling me, hey, we did well again, and we had the better chances. We outshot the opponent, but we ended up with only a point.
No, and you're right, Glenn. But this is a process that we are going through. And, you know, I've made it a real point to get kind of the defensive side of things correct first. And like I said, I wanted to kind of set that first, use that as a platform that we move forward on. Now, like I said, we went on the road and we out-created them. I thought we had the better chances. Boniak had a couple looks. Will Bruin had a couple looks, you know, broke through, had a shot with his left foot at the end of the first half that went just a little bit wide of the post. We had a couple headers. I thought we were a little bit off on our set pieces. I think that should always be a strength of ours. So just within this group and how we're playing, Glenn, I still think there's goals there that we've just been a little bit off. So we will continue to work on those things. I need to continue to look at, you know, some of the offensive patterns, how we can go from defending to attacking a little bit better. I thought there were a lot of instances in the game where we did a really good job limiting their chances when we won the ball, but within 2 or 3 passes, we had given it back. So that's something that I'm really going to focus on over, you know, this next week and into the next week, because again, these things, you know, they take time on training ground to work through. But I think if we can make that transition a little bit better, then we get the ball into the attacking zones with more players around. And, you know, we have good attacking players. So once the ball gets there, we've done a pretty good job of creating chances. I would just like to get the ball there on a more frequent basis. So, yes, I think we can get better there. And, yes, it does come down to just scoring a goal. Every once in a while, the chance is going to be there. And we need to, you know, we need to continue to work on that, and with the chances we get, not necessarily score. Well, yes, we need to score goals, Glenn, but we need to put the ball on target. So, you know, all of those things we need to continue to work on, and that's what we're doing. It's what we're doing every single day, you know, trying to make sure that we have you know, a focus on the defensive side of things. But now, as we continue to work on that, we need to build in some of these offensive patterns, some of that finishing, some of the just confidence in goal. So, like I said, we're working at it every day.
Wade Barrett, Dynamo manager, joining us, courtesy of HoustonDynamo.com, again, where you get tickets for the Dynamo and Dash. So let's go two-part here, Wade. Let's go to during the run of play, creating more chances, and I'm referencing what you just mentioned, which is patterns of play. We've seen some nice ones develop on the left side of the field with DeMarcus Beasley, Alex Lima, Boniek. Talk about some of the patterns of play that maybe visually we as fans out here in media should see.
Well, I've talked a lot in the last couple weeks to our outside mid and our outside back. And when the ball is shifting across the line, either through midfield or across the back line, just some of the movement that we can create to try to get the ball into those areas. And a lot of times those two players get stacked one on top of the other close to the line. And I don't mind that as a starting position, but I want there then to be movement. And, you know, sometimes that's going to mean that outside mid kind of checking back into space, either, you know, so that he then has a pass to the defensive midfielder or someone else who's supporting. And then we get that outside back going on that side. You know, so just getting the ball into those areas that sometimes are difficult to defend. It's a little bit kind of getting in between the lines. And that's not just from, you know, the forward or someone even playing underneath, but it's a little bit that movement when we do shift the ball around to the other side. How do we get the ball to those guys in good positions? So, you know, we've gone through that. I've kind of gone through a couple different options, a couple different ways we can do that. And then, you know, the next step is once we get the ball there, then what are the next set of options? So, again, we're running through these things. And it just, you know, it might take a little bit more time as we address those. But that said, Glenn, we do have attacking players. And I'm trying to just give options, to give a platform for those players to move forward, because we do have guys that are capable of making good decisions all on their own, and they can pick good runs, they can make good plays. And that's the second part I always come back to, is that we have to make a play. And, you know, at this point in the season for us, I expect every game we be in to be a close game. That's what I expect from the unit, that we always have a chance. And, you know, sometimes it might come down to just being the team that takes their chance better than the other team. And, you know, Glenn, I really feel like if we have one or two of those go our way, I think the confidence in the group gets better, and then they'll start going in more. So, you know what? I mean, if that one had gone in at the end, you know, who knows what we'd be talking about this week. Might be something different. But, you know, we're continuing to work at it.
Dynamo manager Wade Barrett joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. It's always great to have Wade on the program here, talking everything that you want to know about the Houston Dynamo. We take it into areas that others aren't going to go, and we appreciate that from Wade. So let me go back to that and just say, at what point does the Dynamo become a little bit better counterattacking team? And you mentioned the word transition, and we all know in 2 or 3 seconds, a snapshot that an individual player takes on the ball and seeing a team shape altered, these decisions have to come quick in the modern game. I mean, we've watched the Euros with these well-organized teams. We see them in MLS. The coaches do a great job of organizing teams. But, you know, when did the Dynamo get a few breaks on, you know, the counterattack and get them a little bit more consistently and maybe pick off a few goals that don't have to take 6, 7, 8 passes to produce a chance?
Right. Well, I've talked with the guys that are playing across the front line. And, you know, it changes a little bit from game to game, Glenn. I felt like in the Philadelphia game, I really felt like we'd be able to play the ball into the forward's feet. It seemed like the center backs for Philadelphia have had a hard time dealing with that pass. And that if you play that forward who then lays it off to the other players joining, you could get at them in the wide areas. So, you know, up to the forward, lay a pass back, and then we get out wide. But, you know, against other teams, to kind of get that counterattack going, sometimes that forward's run has to be away first. Now, if it's on to get behind the defense, then yes, I want us to look for that ball behind the defense. But if it doesn't happen, at least that forward has run the two center backs back another 10 or 15 yards, and then we might have a pass forward to one of our midfielders that's going into that space. And we worked on that this past week about, you know, having that run, the first run when the ball turns over, going forward, looking for it. If it's not on, at least we've then created the space for some of our midfielders to advance and get the ball into an attacking area. And, you know, that takes it takes us winning the ball, number one. It takes the forward paying attention to the run forward, number two. But then it also takes a commitment that as soon as we've won the ball, someone in our midfield line has to join and get forward. We can't just all be behind the ball and expect that the one forward is going to go do the job for everybody to get us up the field. We also have to take responsibility in the midfield that not everybody, but one or two of those midfielders need to advance quickly. And that's, a, you know, it's a big ask when I know they've been shifting back and forth across the line to win the ball, but that's what it's going to take for us to get out. And I think if we do get out, then we'll either catch them on the break, or if it's not on, it gives us time for everyone else to kind of catch up to the play and keep possession in the attacking area.
Now, what about just singular strikers and the differences in the stable of strikers that you have? You know, I'll watch L.A. play a game where maybe they're outplayed or you know, it's a very even game. Knights are outplayed, but Robbie Keane will come up with a moment of brilliance, and they take the 3 points. Maybe didn't play the best soccer in every category, but they get the points. Who is that striker for the Dynamo? Is it still to be seen? Because we know they're all talented, and we know they're all different. In the likes of you know, Will Brune, Mauro Minotas, Kubo Torres, Giles Barnes, et cetera.
Right. Well, you know, for Kubo, we're just not going to see much of Kubo. So that one's a tough one right now. You know, he's been gone with the Olympic team for most of the time since I've kind of taken over. He's been away from the group. So, you know, even the time that he is available, I mean, he was available in the Orlando game. But, you know, he hasn't been with the group to kind of be around everything that we're doing and to understand everything. Now, he's still a smart soccer player, but I think we'll see most likely the best of him when he does get back and he's here for a string of games. And I can really be very clear with him about exactly what we want and what we need on a weekly basis. But then, yeah, Glenn, I mean, it's between the other three. I mean, Will, you know, Will has done a good job up there. I don't think naturally that's his first tendency to try to stretch the defense, but he does look for that run. Mauro, you know, Mauro does look to stretch the defense. So I think we need, and I will continue to evaluate that and see if I think that, you know, that Mauro can do that over a 90-minute span. Because like I said, Mauro is an excellent player and he has a huge upside. I just want him to continue to work on, you know, on the other parts of his game and understanding the pressure and the shape. And I think he's doing that. So Glenn, he is deserving, you know, more consideration as we move forward. And then I still like the idea of using Giles up top. So, you know, I think Giles, just with his strength, with his pace, his ability to get behind, you know, those are kind of the three options that we have right now in that role. And I'm considering all of them. I mean, like I said, as we get into every single game, I'm trying to look and see what we can do going forward that provides us the best opportunity to win. And, you know, going into the LA game, those are kind of the options that I'm mulling through.
All right, so that's part one of Wade Barrett. Part two will be coming up after this commercial break. Right now, quick word for Next Level Soccer ID. They're hosting on July 16th and 17th a girls' ID camp in Katy, Texas. Open to all high school age players from freshmen to sophomores. Coaches in the college game from around the country coming in to run these sessions and try to identify players for their program. It's Next Level Soccer ID. $50 discount for all Soccer Matters listeners. The code is COPA50, nextlevelsoccerid.com. It is run by St. Thomas head coaches Dan Balaguero and Nick Bajarekovic. We'll take a 7-Up break right now.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.